What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron, go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, get every episode for free, right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. As we normally do on Wednesdays at 1 o'clock, we talk to the one and only Mark Starling. He's the morning guy up in Asheville, my old stomping grounds, former colleague, friend of the program and mine. Mark Starling, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, Pete?
I am doing well, sir, doing well. So I understand a little bird told me that apparently Asheville has come to the realization that people would prefer to have a safe and clean downtown area, as if there is some sort of a connection between those sentiments and a lot of the money that Asheville takes in from tourism. Is this accurate?
Well, it seems that city council sees it that way, right?
Yeah.
So much so that they want to tax everybody in order to make it happen. Now, we got to get into the Wayback Machine real quick. Let's go way back to June of, let's say 2020, okay?
Okay.
So we had the George Floyd riots going on, right? We had all of the unrest and the what was, you know, everything was happening in cities all over the country. And right here in little old Asheville, we also had quite the riotous behavior taking place downtown. And after this all took place, a bunch of businesses got together, and they wrote a letter that basically told the police, hey, you're kind of nothing but a bunch of racists and Nazis.
Mm.
And then the city council came out with the same type of letter that kind of said the same thing, condemning the police department for what happened in Minnesota, right? Asheville police didn't have anything to do with that.
Are we sure about that?
Well, I mean,
otherwise, why would they write that kind of a letter?
Well, just because they're active. It's a little activist-y, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So right after that happened, then we started to see the departure of law enforcement, right? A lot of officers said, hey, you know what? I'm already this close to retirement. The city doesn't really support me. The money's not all that great. All the residents, at least by accounts of letters, we're not very happy with the police department for whatever reason, and so they just went ahead and said, we're leaving. We're retiring, or we're going to transfer to another department, or, you know, they just decided to change careers. So then we ended up with this massive deficit in law enforcement patrolling the city streets. And of course, what happens when you don't have law enforcement? You have more crime. Well, business owners quickly found out that they did not enjoy having 200-pound naked meth addicts with machetes on their doorsteps while they were trying to open their business in the morning to get in. And so then, of course, they gathered together to write a letter to say, hey, we support the police department and we support public safety.
Mm.
Well, by that time, it was too hard to fill all of the vacancies left when all of these officers decided to go elsewhere. So they had to come up with more money somehow. Well, they can't come up with more money because that would mean they've got to come up and take away money from some of their pet projects.
Can't have that.
So the next logical step is, well, we should create a business improvement district. And I know you're probably excited because since it passed, it means we're getting ambassadors.
Yes! Yes! And this has been a long-held dream of mine. When I worked in Asheville, I was a big proponent of having ambassadors, but on one condition, that they have sashes.
Correct.
They got to have a big sash that goes around the shoulder, down to the waist, and have like ambassador or something on it. I don't care about the colors. I don't care how glittery it has to be, but sashes for the ambassadors that walk around and tell people like where to go. And
watch out for poop.
Watch it. Right? Steer clear of this poop zone here and this needle zone there. Right.
Right. Right. So basically, when you ask me, are the people excited about it? I only say not really because literally everyone that came to speak for public comment was against it because they think it's going to make things more expensive downtown. Because if you're a business person, when you get passed on an expense like a tax or a fee increase, you don't just absorb it and eat it. You do what? You pass it on in your services and products.
Mm-hmm.
It's already exorbitant to live downtown. It's exorbitant to eat downtown. This is not going to do anything for locals to entice them to bring their business downtown, basically.
So, right. So the Business Improvement District, or the BID, or the BID, it's a property tax, as I recall, that would apply only to the downtown zone.
Correct.
And then
correct.
All the money that is generated above the normal property tax rate, whatever this new BID tax is, whatever that revenue is, has to be spent for improvements in the downtown zone.
Or yes, correct. Or public safety.
In the downtown zone.
In the downtown zone, correct. Now, it does look like, and I don't want to jinx anything, but it does look like the police department is going to get a 6% increase for salaries, or a 6% increase to their budget for salaries, which is what they need, in order to basically attract officers from other places, continue to attract people to do lateral transfers, and really just stay competitive within the law enforcement market.
Mm.
So this is where we are, right? I mean, why not just put the screws to the people one more time and, get a new tax out there? I'm sure they've felt very good about it. I'll tell you this much. It's so much so it was a 6-1 vote, and I can't even believe that I'm going to admit this on live radio, is that I actually side with the one city commissioner or city council.
Kibroni?
Yeah. I can't even believe the words are coming out of my mouth, Pete. Like, I'm going to have to go bathe again after this.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would recommend anybody in the Asheville area to bathe just as a default. That's just... I mean, always, not knowing anything about anybody, I just always recommend, you're from the Asheville area, I recommend bathing. So,
So I'll tell you how unpopular it was. Someone that was actually sitting on, I believe it was kind of like, I don't want to call it the design board for the bid, but it was maybe an advisory panel. Yeah, they woke up to their car spray painted with the words "no bid" on it and their tires slashed. That's how popular this thing is, okay?
Well, to be fair, it was probably just some, leftover pent-up energy from the pro-Hamas rally. They just,
which was actually also pent-up leftover energy from when the other city council person had their cars vandalized for signing a letter that was in support of public safety.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, this goes back, this kind of behavior goes back years in and around Asheville. It's what I was talking about in the last hour, too, where this kind of behavior, the vandalism and the intimidation tactics from these left-wing activists will continue until Democrats say enough. And they're not willing to say it at this point, obviously. And now they're getting their own stuff vandalized. Remember, Deborah Campbell, the city council or the city manager, when she first arrived and then the Summer of Love broke out and she came forward with, I think, her first budget proposal. And Deborah Campbell, formerly of the city of Charlotte, went up there to take the city manager gig and they put signs in her front yard. Right?
Actually, they weren't signs. They were gravestones.
Yeah.
They were fake gravestones. But that was after they delivered a casket filled with manure to the front door of the police station.
Right.
And said, "This is for you guys. This is where you belong."
Pigs get it. They're pigs. Yeah.
Right.
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 So this kind of behavior is tolerated by the Democrats that are in control of the city of Asheville. And so, like, on the one hand, you hate to see it. But on the other hand, oh, you hate to see it,
I'm just kind of glad that back in July I pulled the trigger and decided to move to Black Mountain.
Yeah. Well, I think they're coming for you. I think they're coming for you in Black Mountain, too.
Well, I got to tell you, they do things a little bit differently here in Black Mountain as far as the police department is concerned. We don't have a lot of tolerance for tomfoolery here in Black Mountain.
I don't even know tomfoolery. I don't even know him. All right. Mark Starling, he's the morning guy at WWNC up in Asheville. Thanks for your time, Mark. Good to hear from you, brother.
You got it. You too, Pete. Take care.
All right. See ya. A couple of messages. This from Russ. He says, it's kind of funny how so much of the anti-West protests anti-Israel, anti-America, anti-capitalism, anti-Christian, anti-colonialism, etc., don't want to go back to the way the indigenous people lived, but instead want Soviet or Maoist-style communism. Yeah. Right, because that's not... Right, communism is not a colonializing or a colonizing kind of philosophy at all. I mean, yes, they conquered all of those countries and people and expanding the USSR, and then when communism collapsed, as it always does, then, of course, you know, they broke apart again, and all of these countries started reasserting their own independence and the like, which is not at all indicative of the colonization that occurred, obviously. And while we, you know, go, we're forced to kind of revisit all of the past evils and try to, you know, celebrate all of the past cultures and such, we never go all the way back to them. We don't try to adopt those lifestyles now. It's always just rewind about 150 years, 100 years to communism, to Marxism, and let's start there. It's always, because again, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution, right? Here's a message from the Hellion. I love it when you check in with the Asheville guy, Mark Starling. Those weirdos don't get near enough coverage of the things they're over there screwing up. That is, all right. So it's one of the things I learned when I went and worked in Asheville. I was up there for like 9 years, after I left WBT in, 2011. Went on to Time Out, the ownership of the station at that time. They are no longer the owners, but the previous or owners 2 times ago, whatever. They decided my services would no longer be necessary. And so I ended up getting the job up in Asheville. And so when I went up there and I had heard people at, you know, tell me at the time, they were like, oh, nobody, you know, people in North Carolina, particularly Raleigh state government, they don't believe like this part of the state exists. Like they're not even aware of this as part of the state. And that they get ignored all the time by Raleigh and by other parts of the state. And I thought, wow, I used to hear this all the time about Charlotte too. And people in Charlotte, when I remember when I first started as a reporter, I would hear this similar sentiment, you know, people up in Raleigh believe that, you know, the state ends at I-77 basically. There's, you know, there's nothing else to the west of to the west of I-77, and I did not believe that to be necessarily true. I mean, at the time, the Speaker of the House was Jim Black, so I felt like, well, that's not really accurate. So when I went to Asheville and I heard something very similar, I thought, oh, maybe this is the same sort of thing, and maybe they say the same stuff down east, but I doubt it because look at all the roads down there; they're all very nice and paved and wide. They got all sorts of interstates and stuff going through there because why? That's where the power center was for decades in North Carolina politics. So there's a lot of investment that occurred down east. But when I went to Asheville and I heard that sentiment expressed there, and after being there for now, you know, 8-9 years, it is true. Like for them, it is true. In Asheville, like that in Western North Carolina in general, they get ignored. And that's why I want Mark on to talk about stuff going on out there, because it does get largely ignored. It only has one TV station locally. And so there's not a lot of coverage that comes out of Western North Carolina from a policy and governance perspective. I mean, yes, you get, oh my gosh, we had a bear sighting. You know, you get that stuff. Although now we got some in Tiga K, so I don't even know if we're going to get the bear sighting stories. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? The email is pete@thepetecallinershow.com. So as you just heard there in the traffic report, the Veep is on the move. I wonder what her code name is. Kamala Harris in Charlotte today, the vice president, appearing at Johnson C. Smith University, and did a little Q&A sit-down session in front of an audience. Economic Opportunity for All was the name of it. Well, at least that's on the backdrop, and it's Freedom to Thrive. And Tom Elliott from Grabian Media, he pulled one of the sound bites from this from this appearance. Put us on the map there. Let's take a listen to what the vice president has to offer us in exchange for our votes.
Also giving for people who are the first generation in their family to seek to buy a home, $25,000 grants for startup capital to actually be able to pay down.
Hang on a second. All right. Hang on. So people who are first generation in their family to seek to buy a home, because nobody else tried to buy a home ever in the family. So come from a long line of renters. Okay. So you want to buy a house. You're the first generation to buy a house. Okay. I got, I'm following that. Okay. But a grant to use as the down payment to pay down a loan. I'm kind of getting the sense that she has never actually purchased a house with a mortgage. Do you not understand? Okay, so is it a grant? There's more to this. I'm going to re-rack this because there's more to it here. But I'm unclear as to the nature of this vote buying scheme. I mean, sorry, this policy proposal.
Also giving for people who are the first generation in their family to seek to buy a home, $25,000 grants for startup capital to actually be able to pay down.
Startup capital.
On home ownership, $25,000 if you are first, or you are the generation that is the first in your family to be able to buy a home. The other thing we are doing is for a certain tranche of folks, helping them first-time homeowners, $400 a month in credits toward paying your mortgage. And these issues are exactly the kind of issues that when you address them make a huge difference in terms of who's able to buy a home.
All right, so first off, let's give credit where it is due. No cackling during that the delivery of that vote buying scheme. So that's good. Usually she busts out into a weird laugh for no reason at all. So she has apparently maybe been working on that, and no cackling. $25,000 in startup capital, she called it, like it's a business, right? like the Veep here is, she's like an angel investor or something. you're going to take, okay, so $25,000 startup capital to be used to pay down the loan or something, but it's down payment assistance. Okay, so 25 grand. Hey, you know what? Like, let's say I'm the first generation. My parents, they bought their own home. And so I'm not the first generation to purchase a home. But let's say I am. And let's say I've got some kids and they are of an age, they want to buy a house, but they cannot afford to buy a house at this time because housing prices are so crazy. Thanks, Joe Biden. So the idea here is you're going to give my kids the 25 grand so they can buy a house. Hey, you know what? If you give me the 25 grand, I'm pretty sure I could afford a down payment. Right? That's the whole point of giving me the 25 grand. No? Why are you? This is so stupid. $25,000 to pay for the down payment, to help pay for the down payment, but you got to be first generation. And then $400 a month towards your mortgage. like, this is no better than the loan forgiveness stuff, right? I understand the there are benefits to home ownership. Here's the thing, though. They're not all, owning a home is not all benefits. There are a lot of benefits. I've owned homes. I own one now. I've owned homes and I've rented. And there was some guy I was watching, a financial advisor guy. He's got some YouTube channel or some Netflix special or something. I forget. And he pointed out, and this is very real, and this is something to consider. He rents. He's a financial advisor expert. He goes and he helps people get, you know, out of debt and all this. And he rents. And the reason why, he says, is that when you buy a home, that mortgage payment, that monthly payment, that's your minimum. That's the floor, right? You're gonna get additional expenses that come up. Things happen after that mortgage payment you're going to have to account for. So that's the minimum. When you rent, that's the ceiling, right? Your rent includes any kind, your HVAC goes out, the landlord has to fix that, right? So it just depends on the kind of lifestyle you want to lead and what you can afford, and everybody's different. But home ownership really is not for everybody, especially if you move around a lot. You know, it's really not for everybody. Let's head over to Pete. Great name, Pete. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, Pete. This $25,000 for somebody who's not had a mortgage before, do you think of this as a handout to the family taking out the mortgage, or do you think of it as a way to lock them into a big giant handout to the banks? I mean, if they get a 30-year mortgage, that's a nice income stream for the banks.
So what do you think it does to the price of homes?
You don't want to get me involved in that, because I've been arguing that mortgage interest ought to be mortgage interest deduction ought to be eliminated in the first place to drop down the price of homes. But all this does is increase the price of homes.
Because now everybody walking through the door, not everybody, but first-time home buyers, they have an extra $25,000 attached to them. And so now, do you raise the price of all of the homes, and people whose parents may have had homes, but they cannot afford a home themselves, they now have to come up with an extra $25K in order to compete in the bidding against somebody who's got a government check.
Right. And actually, the way to fix that is just go ahead and make your rent deductible.
Yeah, why not, right?
People, it's an article of faith that mortgage interest ought to be deductible, but frankly, the people that put that together were the banks back during the Depression years, sold us on home ownership. And I mean, I've bought and sold a lot of homes, and it's a headache.
Yeah,
maintenance and everything else on top of it, you know, is a headache. I'm renting right now. I don't worry about the roof or the paint or the grass. I may buy again. We'll have to see. But back to the subject at hand. They think it's for the individual vote, but really you're incentivizing the community to think about engaging in a lifetime of payments, during your prime earning years to banks.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the benefit of home ownership, though, is that you're building equity in the property and then you eventually can sell it. And as one, I've bought and sold several homes, and I've made profits on those homes. And so there is obvious economic benefits if you are able to keep up with the payments, obviously, keep the home in good shape, and you're not spending too much money on the cost of the housing, right? That's why you shouldn't be. I remember the first loan, and this was back before everything went belly up, and they were doing these exotic mortgage products, and they offered me a 7-year adjustable rate mortgage. And they tried to put me in a house that was like 4 times the price of the house I bought, because I knew, don't buy a house that's more than, you know, 1/3 of my take home. They said gross, but I was like, I want to make sure I've got the money to pay to, you know, fix the place up and to furnish it. But yeah, they would have put me in a house that I could not afford and would have no disposable income left over if, God forbid, something went wrong with the home. So I'm aware of that kind of, you know, predatory lending, if you will. It's not predatory, but like that idea that they're going to sell you on this idea. You can totally buy, you know, a house that's way more expensive than you can afford. But a lot of people get taken in with that, and they get into homes they cannot afford. So,
well, yeah, they do. And, I mean, it goes both ways. I see both sides of it. But,
yeah.
You know, if, yeah, she's here to give you $25,000 to get you, you know, if your family's never had a house. But really, I hate to be that cynical. It really is a way to goose the mortgage industry as much as it is to get a vote.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Pete, I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you very much. Let me get to a couple of emails. Stanley says, if the federal government is going to give you $400 a month to help pay your mortgage, but the local government is going to take $400 a month from you in property taxes, doesn't this just seem like a way for the federal government to subsidize local government cronyism? Dennis says, did the mad cackler explain how many months these new homeowners would get the $400 gift? She did not. And that is a... That's a good point, because what happens, here's a message from Todd, who says, how long is the $400 subsidy for the mortgage going to last? Because whenever it ends, whatever that timeline is, I predict a massive amount of foreclosures. Let me see here. I got another one. The housing market is super inflated, and especially starter homes are scarce. So we're going to flood the market with a bunch of buyers with an extra $25K. Yeah, that should help. Come on, people. Economics here. Yeah. Hang on. I got another email from John. I oppose this. However, if they were to implement it, the only way for it to really work is to say that the $25,000 cannot be factored in when they are trying to qualify for a mortgage payment. And then this $25,000 goes towards the mortgage and lowers it. If this is added up front within 5 years, these people will be facing foreclosure because they will be buying houses more expensive than they can afford. Greg says, before Obama times, I sold new homes, bring in $100 and we would build you a house. So buyers had no skin in the game. When times got hard, they just moved out and threw in the keys. Take a look at The Big Short. I did finally see the movie The Big Short. Crazy. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.